What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, it's Saturday. It's the Saturday show where I bring you one from the vault and one from the week. This week, I gave a long, rather long, okay, perhaps overly long spiel. I gotta give a few spiels about Robert Hur's testimony in front of the House Judiciary Committee. And in this segment that I'm going to play, I excoriated both parties and the circus that Judiciary Committee hearings have become. All of the pomp and the circumstance just being for each side to score political points. None of that's new, but I do think it's worthwhile every once in a while to chronicle just exactly how low we've become. Part of that low centered on the fact that Hur was given the almost impossible task of threading a needle between not bringing a charge, which would certainly piss off Republicans who don't understand or say they don't understand or can't be made to understand, no matter how many times it's explained that there were actual differences between how Donald Trump dealt with the credible accusations that he had improperly stored documents and how Joe Biden did the same. One cooperated, one didn't. Okay. But also informing the hearing was the idea of memory and the idea of the unknowableness of the past. And this got me thinking, and so we will play the one from the vault about Christine Blasey Ford. So when she testified before the Senate version of the Judiciary Committee, she, as a psychologist at Stanford, uttered that very memorable phrase, meta-memorable, you might say, that indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter. A few days before that hearing, so we wouldn't know that would happen. We wouldn't know at the time this podcast was recorded. We didn't know if she would testify or the circumstance. We were just trying to get our minds around the idea of what constitutes reasonable doubt, what constitutes fairness. That also informed the Hur hearing. Was it fair or gratuitous for him not just to not bring charges, but to say poor memory? So issues of memory and judiciary committees and fairness are on both the episode from this week and the vault. The one from the vault is from September of 2018, and the one from this week is just a few days ago, so fresh, off the presses. And yet when you hear it, you might say, wasn't that 3 weeks ago? But in either case, enjoy. Hi, I'm here to talk about Surfshark, the VPN. Surfshark. What's a VPN? Well, VPN, of course, stands for a very porcine narwhal. No, it doesn't. It doesn't stand for a pig-like unicorn whale, but it is, in fact, versatile, like that animal might be. A VPN is a virtual private network. It's an extremely useful tool. One pretty common way to use it, let's say you're a subscriber to, I'll throw out a brand name, Netflix, and you would like to access the Netflix catalog that they might have in France or the Czech Republic, you can do that. Tis your ability with a VPN. Or what I do is I like a lot of the podcasts that are available on certain national broadcasters prominent in Europe, but you can't always hear them here. But if you were in Europe, if you were in the UK, you could. I use it for that. Paywalls, there is another thing. I'm in favor in general of paying for journalism, and I do. Oh boy, do I. But sometimes you just need to read that third article and you're locked out after a second. With a VPN, you can access it. Plus, think of it like a mask. You don't always want everyone tracking your activity online. And don't think of a mask as you're doing something sneaky or surreptitious. Think of the masks we wore during COVID when it was necessary to do so. It's just about hygiene. The Surfshark VPN provides that service as well. Get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/gist. Enter promo code GIST for 3 extra months for free. You heard me right. 3 extra months for free. That's Surfshark, www.hyatt.deals/gist.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
And now the spiel. Today, I realized I'm not a Democrat. Well, I am a Democrat. That is my party registration. I have always resisted registering as such. I, for many years, didn't think it was proper for a journalist to declare a political party. This took me up to 2016 when I did register as a Democrat, figuring that if I was going to make a reasonable case that reasonable people could look at both parties and find something reasonable to like, that is all blown up when Donald Trump is the standard bearer of one of the parties. So even if a good journalist could absent himself or herself from choosing sides, that was, you know, the time to choose. And in doing so, there was an added bonus. I got to de facto enfranchise myself, right? As a New Yorker or a Brooklynite, I don't know, it was not much fun having absolutely no say or no impact or no meaning in any election that would ever come before me. Anyway, here I am, a literal registered Democrat, but certainly an independent by inclination. But, you know, on national issues, even on local issues, I try to think of things not as reflexively one party or another and not to fall into traps or mindsets or narratives, independent thinking. And then Robert Herr comes along and Robert Herr says Joe Biden had a poor memory. And I say, yeah, that sounds about right. Didn't you say that too? I think most reasonable people did. But the entire Democratic world said, how dare you? How could you? That is so improper and gratuitous. That is the common, most frequent word to talk about that phrase in the Herr report about Joe Biden being an elderly man with a poor memory. I suppose Herr could have said, Biden, he's slipping a little bit. He's not the steel trap he used to be. But he didn't say that. He said he was elderly, which is true. He's 81 and would come across as sympathetic, which is also true and actually pretty kind, but that he had a poor memory. I myself have a poor memory, not the memory I used to have. If someone described me as having a poor memory, I might say, I don't know if it's poor, but it's not really that good. I mean, just the other day, I was trying to remember, there was a guy, and I was trying to remember the name of this guy in my neighborhood where I grew up, and he was a really nice guy. And I talked to him a lot, but he would sometimes you could catch him in his underwear. And I was like, what? And then he hit me, Dad. That was his name. Anyway, in this case, I think it's that Democrats, if you're a Democrat, if you're really a Democrat and feel like you're a Democrat, maybe some other people, but they just chafe at the idea so much, or the exaggeration of Joe Biden as completely out of it or incapable or doddering or dithering. And that's unfair. But then when they hear a fair critique of Biden as having a poor memory, right, accurate, factual, borne out by evidence, they fear or they feel that it will get interpreted as something much worse than it is. And this is an accurate assessment. They say this will be turned into another of these Republican disinformation campaigns where this phrase, poor memory, becomes the guy is drooling in his soup 24 hours a day. So yesterday during the Herr hearing, which I played extensive clips for you, my point being both sides, and I don't like to necessarily both sides it, but in this case, both the Democrats and the Republicans on the panel were really, really tendentious. The Democrats did try to challenge the idea of Biden having a bad memory. They put some of the evidence to Herr. I thought Herr answered it pretty well. I didn't dwell too much on their failed attempts to confront Herr with inconsistencies. The greater point being, no, Joe Biden does have a good memory. There are other things to talk about, but not to Joy Reid of MSNBC. MSNBC, pretty much now the media arm of the DNC. They went to work. There was a piece headlined, I mean, this is the online version, Biden memory issues were a lie, probe transcripts and special counsel Robert Herr testimony show. A lie? Under oath, Robert Herr committed perjury? That's a felony. Well, let's hear MSNBC host Joy Reid present her case.
Now, let's not forget that a major part of this hearing was Republicans hoping to keep alive Mr. Herr's gratuitous description of Biden in his report as a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory and diminished faculties. While having nothing to do with the classified documents, Herr made the claim in his report that during his five-hour interview, Biden was unable to remember key dates, including when his son Beau died of cancer. Oh, and you better believe the right wing ran with that claim as further proof that Biden is too old to be commander in chief. Yeah, except we now have the transcript of the interview right here that shows it was a lie.
A lie. It was a lie that Joe Biden could not remember because we have the transcripts. Well, I, too, have reviewed the transcripts. And in them, you find Joe Biden saying variations of I don't remember or I don't know more than 50 times. That was the New York Times count. NPR expanded the search to include phrases like I don't know, I don't specifically remember, or I have no goddamn idea. They got 100 hits on that one. There were also some phrases of I don't know, where the hell, and there's probably photographs in there, my guess, of the Corvette. I'm not positive. So well over 100 times did Joe Biden not have a good memory. I will read you, and this is from the Herr report, I will read you the statement that Robert Herr wrote in his summary that led to the assertion that, quote, Joe Biden could not remember key dates, including when his son Beau Biden died of cancer. Here's that portion in the report. In his interview with our office, Mr. Biden's memory was worse. He did not remember when he was vice president, forgetting on the first day of the interview when his term ended. If it was 2013, when did I stop being vice president? And forgetting on the second day of the interview when his term began. Quote, in 2009, am I still vice president? He did not remember, even within several years, when his son Beau died. So that's a lie, right? It's not a lie, because we have the transcript. Mr. Herr. So during this time when you were living at Chainbridge Road and there were documents relating to the Penn Biden Center or the Biden Institute or the Cancer Moonshot or your book, where did you keep papers that related to those things that you were actively working on, President Biden? Well, I don't know. This is what? 2017, 2018, that area? Mr. Herr, yes, sir. President Biden. Remember, in this time frame, my son is either been deployed or is dying. And so it was, by the way, there were still a lot of people at the time when I got out of the Senate that were encouraging me to run in this period, except the president. I'm not a mean thing to say. Just thought that she, meaning Clinton, Hillary, had a better chance of winning the presidency than I did. And so I hadn't at this point, even though I'm at Penn, I hadn't walked away from the idea that I may run for office again. But if I ran again, I'd be running for president. And so what was happening, though? What month did Beau die? Oh, God, May 30th, Ms. Cotton, who's an aide, 2015, unidentified male speaker, 2015, President Biden. Was it 2015 he had died? Unidentified male speaker. It was May of 2015, President Biden. It was 2015. There we have in the report, Joe Biden saying 2017, 2018, that was when Beau was either deployed or dying. And then he was reminded, no, it was 2015. That comports with the statement that he could not recall within several years, all right, not very many years, but within several years when Beau Biden had died. It's not horrible. It's not unforgivable. It's not beyond comprehension. I'm really bad with dates too. Maybe you are too. It doesn't mean much more than what you just heard. But it is also not Joe Biden correctly recalling without assistance from staff and lawyers what year his son Beau Biden died, which is exactly him not recalling the year Beau Biden died, exactly what Herr noted in the report. Here is Joy Reid covering a moment where a representative of Pennsylvania, Madeline Dean, confronts Herr on the date question.
And even when Herr was called out on it today by Congresswoman Madeline Dean, he doubled down.
I want to give you a chance, since the transcript is out, to correct the record on an important point. Very sadly, your report on page 208 says that Mr. Biden couldn't come up with the date, the year of his son, Beau Biden's death, when in fact in the transcript it shows that you asked him the month. And do you know what he said, Mr. Herr? He said, oh God, May 30th. Would you like to correct the record? His memory was pretty firm on the month and the day.
Congresswoman, I don't believe that's correct with respect to the transcript.
Oh, well, Mr. Herr, we have the transcript, too.
Yes, yes, we have the transcript too. We also have the rest of the exchange that Reid didn't play. Now, this part isn't earth-shattering, but I'll play it for you, and I'll lay the case that I'm going to make. So here's Robert Herr answering Dean a little more fully than they played on MSNBC.
And I want to give you a chance, since the transcript is out, to correct the record on an important point. Very sadly, your report on page 208 says that Mr. Biden couldn't come up with the date, the year of his son, Beau Biden's death, when in fact in the transcript it shows that you asked him the month. And do you know what he said, Mr. Herr? He said, oh God, May 30th. Would you like to correct the record? His memory was pretty firm on the month and the day.
Congresswoman, I don't believe that's correct with respect to the transcript, but if you could refer me to a specific page, I'd be happy to look.
I've read about it in reporting. Thank you. I yield back.
Herr is right. Madeline Dean and Joy Reid are not right. I'm not accusing anyone of lying, but Herr is not wrong. Dean gets a piece of this wrong. She says, when in fact the transcript, you asked him the month. That's not how it happened. He didn't ask the month. So in the hearing, Herr says, let's go back to the actual transcript. And she said, well, I just read about it. It's not a nitpick. It was a central part of the Democratic response. You heard me read the transcript, right? You heard that Robert Herr never brought up Beau Biden's death. Biden brought it up himself. Now, the day that the special counsel released the report, Biden was mad. He got his Irish up. And among the things he said was this.
There's even reference that I don't remember when my son died. How in the hell dare he raise that? Frankly, when I was asked the question, I thought to myself, it wasn't any of their damn business.
And that is not true. I will not call it a lie. I think, you know, it's possible that Joe Biden just doesn't remember exactly how it happened. Oh, no, wait. Oh, my God. I can't say that. That's worse, apparently, even when it's accurate. It's worse to ever say. So I guess we could help Joe Biden out by saying he was just lying when he asked how dare Robert Herr brought it up. Now, a friend of mine, very fair-minded friend who heard yesterday's show, and I love him for listening, gave me a call. And I do appreciate being dialed up. Get Pesca on the horn on the blower like that. And he said, well, what about the Eric Swalwell question that Herr said Biden had photographic recall, which I took to mean, oh, a photographic memory. He compliments Biden and says, you, sir, have a photographic memory. And that part wasn't in the report. All right. I watched the whole hearing. I remember that short exchange. The phrase photographic recall was on one of those big boards behind a visual behind Swalwell when he was talking. Here's Joy Reid setting up that part of the hearing.
And in fact, when it came to Biden's memory, Herr actually complimented him during the interview, even though that never came up in the report.
You said to President Biden, you appear to have a photographic understanding and recall of the House. Did you say that to President Biden?
Those words do appear on page 47 of the transcript.
Photographic is what you said. Is that right?
That word does appear on page 47 of the transcript.
Never appeared in your report, though. Is that correct? The word photographic?
That does not appear in my report.
You see, the funny how that happened, right?
That does seem pretty damning, that Herr told Joe Biden you got a photographic memory or photographic recall. But here's the context from the report. So Herr asked Biden about his lake house. Did you ever take classified material there? And then Biden answers at length, at great length. Well, it wasn't a lake house. It was more of a pond house. And you go there and there's a pool table and a couch and then a big fireplace. And you know, you could actually buy your desk as a senator. It's true. And you could buy the chairs. And Biden did that. And he gave a eulogy to Teddy Kennedy and a eulogy to Strom Thurmond. And who does that? A eulogy to both those guys. By the way, once you give a good eulogy, everyone asks you to use his eulogy and then back to the house and quote, and a couch and bookshelving and a television in there. And there is a file cabinet in there. Plus the file cabinets on the credenza behind that open with two big file drawers, and there's file drawers in my on the desk, and so there's another, and then things piled up. Okay, now we're getting to the draft board, right? You sit there and draft designs, and I have more stuff packed up there now. And what happens is, now I'm sorry, you're like, Mike, why are you giving me all this? A little bit of context. He's winding up to this. As vice president and as president, a photographer takes hundreds of pictures of you. And if you're on the way out, so you know what we're talking about, you walk by them. Just so you know what I'm talking about is there are pictures that are put on kind of a board. What is it? Mr. Siskel, an aide says, poster board, President Biden, a poster board or a sticker. And now he gets into the photographs. And there's great pictures of all kinds of things. And I have them hanging on all the walls, all over the downstairs. And now Biden tells a long story about visiting Mongolia and archery, and he hits a target with a bow and arrow, and there's a photograph of it, and the prime minister couldn't pull the arrow out, and the, quote, poor son of a bitch couldn't pull it back, and everyone laughs. And then President Biden, quote, anyway, so I have pictures like that, you know, that are up against the wall, and down here they're all over in the West Wing. Anyway, a lot of those pictures that you remember seeing them piled up, I know there must be 50 of them. I don't know what to do with them, you know? So there's a lot of stuff in the attic that is material that some of it is, you know, I think some of it is in notebooks of mine. I'm not sure. But anyway, that's the totality of where things would be. Mr. Herr understood. That was very helpful. We have some photographs, maybe to show you. But you appear to have a photographic understanding and recall of the house. That was the photographic memory. It wasn't a reference to photographic memory. It wasn't a reference to photographic recall. They were talking about photographs. Herr was saying, yeah, we get it. You have a lot of photographs. You remember the photographs. And also all the parts about Biden describing every nook and cranny of the house. You have a recall of the house. That was it. That was what Robert Herr didn't put in his report because it is irrelevant to the report. He was just trying in that moment in the conversation to get onto something relevant. Do you think, by the way, that Joe Biden has a photographic memory? Do you think Robert Herr thinks that Joe Biden has a photographic memory? What are we talking about? We're talking about photographs. I conclude that none of what Herr said was a lie. Some of what Dean and Swalwell said was not a lie also. It's fine for a Democratic official who's protecting their president. It wasn't more accurate than when Herr said. I think Herr was more accurate in those exchanges. What Joy Reid said also wasn't a lie, but it was, in fact, further from the truth and the facts that either the supposedly partisan Robert Herr or the actual partisan politicians were. If you want to get to a lie, the closest we come is Joe Biden and his fiery denunciation of Robert Herr the day the special counsel's report came out. The good thing for all of us is that this is a minor political kerfuffle, and in the medium to short term, we thankfully will not even remember it. In this age of abundance, the key when it comes to meals is not just to get something in you, it's to get something good, delicious, good for you. Maybe you're a foodie, if you are a real one, you don't like to use that term, but you know going to a great restaurant that you're all excited about, there are reservations, there are bad tables, there's expensive and sometimes disappointing experiences. So let's say that doesn't work out, you try to throw together something from your pantry, or you're not as skilled a cook as maybe some of these great cooks are. Well, there is a service that I've been trying where the meals are delicious and plentiful and the people making them are experts. It's a collective of cooks who got together to give you a bevy, an abundance, yes, a cornucopia of delights. I had mission-style beef burritos made by Jose Garces, shrimp and smoked andouille sausage, is that it? With charred zucchini. It was charred for me. Isn't that nice? Esther Choi made me Korean flank steak rice bowl and asparagus. Thank you, Esther. Cook Unity is the name of the service. What I love about it is, oh my God, they have, you could say, you know, I am a pescatarian, which I am, but I also eat other things. You could say I don't have soy. Give me choices without dairy. They had here where I live 240 choices. You could order a couple weeks ahead and the meals come cooked, prepared. You just heat them up, and they are delicious. The packaging is reusable. They last for a week. It's mostly about the quality and the variety, but every other thing that you think about, like not too much excess packaging, ease of delivery. When you go on the site, couldn't be easier to order. They tell you how many calories. They tell you the nutrition information. I love that. Not eating blind. For instance, the Mediterranean quinoa bowl with shrimp and tzatziki dressing was, you know, it made my heart sing. At 497 grams, only 4 grams of which were saturated fat. What protein? Micronutrient rundown. Just great stuff. Couldn't recommend it enough. Now we get to the price. And this is, I think, the biggest selling point. Especially now, for Gist listeners. Experience chef-quality meals every week delivered right to the door. Go to cookunity.com/thegist or enter code THEGIST before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using the code THEGIST or going to cookunity.com/thegist.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
And now the spiel. Yesterday, I talked about the advisability of believing accusers just because they are accusers, and historically, accusers have been disbelieved, defaulting to belief. And that brings with it problems. I think U.S. senators should know it brings with it problems. I think they probably know this, but they're trying to make or win some other points, maybe laudable points, socially speaking. Some listeners wrote in to reject my framing in the specific instance of Christine Blasey Ford. They said they're not defaulting or suspending critical thinking and believing Christine Blasey Ford. They look at the facts around her accusations, that it hasn't been contradicted, that a version of the accusations came up in therapy sessions years ago, that she has documented actions of a woman who fears another sexual assault. They say this adds up to something believable, and I'm using critical judgment to get there. I get that. That's why I say if I had to choose right now between belief or disbelief, if you said to me, Mike, do you think she was assaulted by Kavanaugh or not? I would say probably. I think it's more likely that it did happen than it didn't happen. But the point is, my level of certainty would be very, very low. So low that I would be extremely willing to believe that I was wrong. Now, one listener, Joseph McCoy, he pursued this point saying that his belief is based on not credulity, but critical thinking, he said. Also, what is it about a couple hours of questions from the Senate Judiciary Committee that makes you think it will get to the truth? It seems like questions without an investigation is a setup for a he said, she said situation that can be waved away. I think that's likely. I mean, I think that's the likely outcome of what questions from the Senate Judiciary Committee are going to be. I mean, the testimony might embarrass Kavanaugh, might embarrass Christine Blasey Ford. If she seems dishonest, it might discredit a senator who seems too harsh or too credulous or too incredulous. But yes, it will probably not lead to a level of anything approaching certainty. I mean, how can it? They're not even calling Mark Judge. They're not even doing a real thorough investigation. But we should conduct a full and fair hearing, because not doing so would be a horrible statement. And also because it might help. But I do get the concern that all the hearing is, essentially, is window dressing for those who want a chance to vote to confirm him and who are pretty sure that there'll be enough uncertainty to say, oh, I can't disqualify him. But I think this brings up a point that's underexplored. John Dickerson got at it with this question to Trey Gowdy on Face the Nation.
Let me ask you about what standard one should use in trying to sort through all of these facts. This is not a court of law. What's your feeling about the standard that should be used to determine who's telling what the truth of this is?
Now, Trey Gowdy said it's a good question. And he ultimately answered that he thinks the standard should be beyond a reasonable doubt. And he said it ought to be, if you're going to take away someone's freedom, it also ought to be a high burden when you're going to impact someone's reputation. Okay, those are two wildly disparate things. Jail versus some people looking down on you as you,
in the case of Kavanaugh as you sit on the second highest court in the land, the U.S. Court of Appeals. If Kavanaugh didn't do the things he's accused of, then it will be an injustice, a slight injustice, slighting him as he attempts to become a justice. But really, how different will his life be? I'm not cold-hearted here. This is, again, the scenario where he really didn't do these things. He's accused of them. He's not allowed on the Supreme Court. I think his life will be that conservative stalwarts will believe him and think of him as a martyr, and liberals who loathe his jurisprudence will find this other thing to loathe him for, that it is an inaccurate thing. But how much should he really care about their opinion anyway? The big thing is that he won't be on the court. That's the big injustice if he really didn't do these things. The blow to his reputation, really, really small. I mean, look at Clarence Thomas. There is a guy who has concocted a martyr's complex around wrongs for which there's a lot of documentary evidence that he actually committed. I mean, the big thing that would affect Kavanaugh's life and ours would be that he wouldn't be on the Supreme Court. It's a little tiny bit reputational, gigantically occupational. But there's another reason why reasonable doubt cannot possibly be the standard to disqualify Kavanaugh. And Trey Gowdy can't even possibly believe that reasonable doubt should be the standard for assessing Christine Blasey Ford's accusations. In a court, you have reasonable doubt, that's the highest standard. One step down is clear and compelling evidence. One step down is preponderance of the evidence. Obviously, the default in most matters of judgment is preponderance of the evidence. It's a fancy phrase for saying, what do I believe happened? What's more likely than not? If it is more likely that Brett Kavanaugh attempted to rape Christine Blasey Ford, then of course he should be kept off the court. Chuck Grassley said as much. Can you imagine Trey Gowdy saying, well, I thought it was likely that he tried to rape her, but since my threshold is beyond reasonable doubt, I still would vote for him to be on the court. He'd never even utter those words, and this guy's retiring after this term. I want to say this. I think preponderance of the evidence is too high. There's another lower standard, substantial evidence. I don't know exactly what percent to put on these standards. I know this. Preponderance of the evidence is anything more than 50%. And then there's been a lot of study into what reasonable doubt means in terms of a percentage. There are studies that you can do to figure out how jurists think of beyond all reasonable doubt. And 95% is the number that most of these studies come up with, around 95%. But what if you thought there was a 40% chance that this sexual assault happened? Would it still be okay to confirm him? What if it were a 30% chance? If there's a 30% chance that you're voting for a person who could become a justice on the Supreme Court, would you still vote for that person? Know this. If there were two justices or two potential justices that came before you and you thought they each had a 30% chance of committing some horrible crime, then it's more likely than not that one of them would have committed the crime. So I don't know what the lowest number is that you would accept as an acceptable chance that the sexual assault actually occurred. Is it 10%? Is it 2%? 2% is an interesting number to think about. Ponder this. Let's say every Democrat votes against Kavanaugh and the Senate needs all 51 Republicans to confirm him. If 51 people press a button and that button has only a 2% chance of electrocuting them, it is more likely than not that one of those people will be electrocuted. Look, I acknowledge this is getting kind of metaphysical. We're not talking about all senators playing percentage odds, which has a distinct 2% chance. This isn't a game of Plinko, and I don't mean just in terms of seriousness or the stakes. I mean in conceptualizing this. This is one thing that happened with 1% chance that it happened. Only there's not really a chance it happened or it didn't, right? The thing either happened or the thing didn't happen. But I'm talking about the judgment that senators make and the acceptable percent that they are wrong. So what I'm saying is, if you were to be a good person, a responsible legislator, fully executing your responsibility to advise and consent, if you think there is any reasonable chance that this happened, define it how you will, I would say somewhere around the mid to high single digits, then you should probably vote against putting Kavanaugh on the court. Unless you're willing to say, look, it may have happened, I'm okay with voting him onto the Supreme Court, despite my doubts. Now, what the senators will say is, I have no doubt. But what they will mean is, I don't even care to explore my doubts. I just want him as a damn justice. Justice be damned. The Gist is produced by the Quaint Mallards, Corey Wara, Joel Patterson, senior producer, and we'll talk to you on Monday, where Crime Week starts.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.